I'm Imani Ivora, and you are listening to the We Are Made podcast, a Black creative series. Stories are an invitation into both who we are and what we stand for. The traces of Black experience throughout history that has allowed us to reclaim the makings of our greatest gifts, creation. These are the stories of Black creatives and curators. Today on the We Are Made podcast, I'm joined by celebrity chef Kenny Gilbert. Born in Cleveland, Ohio, he grew up with a divided interest in both sports and cooking. So he spent most of his time doing both. While he was a naturally driven athlete, his love for cooking always shined through. Following graduation, he decided to pursue a culinary career by attending the Pennsylvania Culinary Institute, later landing him a position as an apprentice at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company. Who knew that one day his passion for cooking would lead him to being on Top Chef and cooking for celebrities such as Oprah Winfrey? Introducing this week's origin story, Kenny Gilbert.
I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, by way of a suburb called Euclid. My mom is from St. Augustine, Florida. My dad is from Chicago. So I grew up with a Midwestern root with a huge influence from the South. It's just me and my brother, Kirk, who's a year and a half younger than me. So we grew up with a big family. Everything that I was involved with, it was evolved around food and entertainment. You know, that's pretty much the gist of my life is watching my mom and my dad have parties at the house. Me and my brother running around with our cousins or friends, and everything was about being social. You know, music tied into it, fashion, food. That was just pretty much the things I was involved with. I played sports, through middle school and high school. I played football in middle school, and then I was a swimmer and diver since I was a little kid. So I stayed with that through high school, and that basically helped really instill the discipline and the work ethic that I actually have today. Because we actually had 2 days of practice, during swim season. So you had to practice before school. We were at school like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, swimming or lifting weights, and then going right into classes. And then, I was always in a vocational culinary arts program. So I was always rotating from different places, on the campus, or going to other schools to hone my craft, then going back to school and then going to practice again. So like, I'm so used to working, being up early and just grinding all day. That's just been, what has been instilled in me since I was born.
Between his mother nurturing his interest for cooking, she also taught him the ins and outs of the kitchen. He used these skills in the world. Kenny goes on to share a story about cooking at school on camp burners and bringing pre-soaked French toast. One may say his destiny was always to become a chef.
My mom took the time to really nurture the talent, as you mentioned, in me, that she saw that where I had the interest. I mean, since I was 3 years old, she showed me the ins and outs of the kitchen, what not to touch, what was hot, what was sharp. She started me off scrambling eggs, and that graduated to me cooking breakfast meats and baking cakes and pies and barbecue and all of it. So I've always had an interest in cooking. And it goes back to my swim team days also. I remember as a freshman in high school, I made it on the varsity team, and being up so early, like after practice, you just finished, doing this killer workout all body. And then, so I was always hungry. So I would take food with me, and actually I would cook in the locker room. My mom gave me like the little portable burners that we use for like camping or whatever. And I would bring like pancake mix or French toast already soaked, or like eggs and bacon or sausage. And I made breakfast every morning for practice, after practice. And so everyone knew, as well as I knew, that this was gonna be my career. Like from the time I was a little kid, it's just what I wanted to do. I figured that if I was gonna have to work for the rest of my life, I needed to do something that I actually loved versus going to work and being miserable doing something I had no interest in.
Cooking was it. Kenny didn't have a backup plan. Well, as he shares, kind of. Every career he shared revolved around the act of making. He preferred the use of art. Worst case scenario, he had another idea for a career path that he later shares. But let's be honest, it has always been and will always be about cooking.
I didn't actually have a backup plan. Let me take that back. When I was in high school, I was determining, you know, I knew that I wanted to be a chef, and I had two routes that I wanted to go in. One was military. I was like, well, I'll go into the Navy and be a cook in the Navy. That way I could travel the world, get exposure, trying different foods from all around the world, cooking. I just thought it would be so much fun to cook for everyone, like on the ship or whatever, and know that it was me, you know, having the hand and making sure that everyone actually was fed, you know. I would take a lot of pride in that. And then the other side was, well, I can go to culinary school, get my degree, and then go work at a big hotel or a big resort or on a cruise ship. For some reason, I was always thinking cruise ships. Get on a cruise ship, cook on a cruise ship, and travel the world. That was, you know, cook and travel the world. I figured I could meet some amazing people. And so that was my, those were my two, only my two options. If I didn't do that, I would have gone to be probably a fireman, because my uncle was a fireman. And, you know, I love the fact that everything that he did to help people out, you know. I never had interest in anything else other than probably cooking, being a fireman, because I knew that at the firehouse that I would be able to cook for everybody as well. So everything was tied into cooking. That was my whole thing. And I love interior design and fashion. My mom was a fashion designer and did like fashion shows and designed clothes for different people and up in Cleveland, some of the affluent people up in that area. And so I was always around watching her sew and stuff like that. So she taught me, she only had boys. So she taught me and my brother how to sew and crochet and macrame and obviously cook and clean. So we were super self-sufficient young men. And I figured that if I, you know, something had to be tied into some kind of art, you know, whether it be some kind of fashion, something in terms of interior design. I loved everything about designing and setting up a room and decorating. So I kind of tie all those things into what I do. So that was probably my ultimate back point. If cooking didn't, is the main thing wasn't going to happen, it'd probably be a fireman. But that was like, that was the worst case scenario. I did not want to do that. But if I was going to do something, that's what it would have been, because I would have been able to still cook.
To truly understand Kenny outside of his cooking, it's important to retrace where his discipline stemmed from. It was his parents. He was lucky enough to be raised by parents that instilled the value of discipline and the purpose of its use. He was taught from an early age the power of sales, nurturing your craft, and the results of determination.
You know, my mom and my dad, you know, I grew up with older parents that were, you know, as in, you know, my mom was like right at 30, 29, 30. So it wasn't like she was like a teenager, 14, 15, 16, even 18, 19. You know what I mean? She was a grown woman. She grew into herself, who she was as a person. You know what I mean? And then she had children, and then she knew how she wanted to raise us, along with my father. My father was 13 years older than my mother. So he already, you know, I had two other half brothers. He was already successful in business. And so I grew up with, when my parents spoke to me and my brother, it was with intent and purpose that every, you know, so there was always a very diligent focus towards every conversation we had. If we were playing cards, there was a mission and a vision behind it. If it was, I remember getting kicked out of the pool. I was like 9 years old and I was doing a race. And the lifeguard, I clearly won the race. I was out of the pool before the other person was even at the wall. And I was like, oh, sweet, I won this race. I was jumping up and down. And then the lifeguard raised the hand of the other person and said, oh, this other person won. And I was like, they didn't win. I clearly won. Like, this is messed up. I ended up pushing the lifeguard in the pool. And I got kicked out of the pool for the summer. I went home. I was all upset. And my mom was like, what's wrong? And I told her what happened. Then my dad came home. He goes, what happened? I said, oh, well, this is what happened. And then so he left and came back and he gave me my allowance. I think I had an allowance of like $20. back then. And he gave me actually $20 worth of candy. He says, here's your allowance, go make your money back. So that was my first lesson in sales. So he took a very negative situation that, because swimming was my world. I woke up, you know, on top of cooking, you know, baking or doing something, I would cook or whatever. Then I was right at the pool. And I was, you know, from the time the gate to the time pool opened to the time it closed. So in order to take my mind off of it, he took a side of him that he was in sales. He was an insurance salesman. So everything, he was a sales oriented person, constantly hustling, grinding it. So he took a very negative situation and turned into a positive for me. That was my first lesson in sales. It's taking this $20 worth of candy and flipping it and making it into like 50 and 60. And I was still around the pool. Then I started selling, you know, homemade popsicles called chili cups, or we call them honey drippers down this area. So I remember, you know, my passion was always serving. I always had a serving aspect to what I was doing, and a salesmanship before my, because that was just was instilled into me from my parents. My mom made sure we were cooking, cleaning, doing all the little details. I mean, I had like a little part-time job helping clean apartments in our neighborhood, in the neighborhood next to ours. When people moved out, I was making like $2 an hour, like $10 or 10 years old. I was like, literally that was child labor. Like that was so bad, but they let me do it. I made $2 an hour because I liked to clean. So I would go in and clean up, and I was hustling, making money. I always had money in my pocket. Always. There was always a way to make money. So, I think ultimately to answer your question is all based on just having older parents that basically, instill discipline in me and my brother. And we weren't allowed to quit something. You know, if we did it, if we said we're going to do it, you weren't allowed to quit. If we were like, oh, we want to do karate. Okay. Well, you can't quit. Like you have to do it. You have to finish it. And, you know, if I was going to do swimming for the summer, you can't quit. You know, you have to finish it. So that was still very young. My dad was an athlete. You know, he was a Golden Glove boxer, ran track, played football. So he was, you know, he read the paper diligently every day. So I was always watching things in routine and very systematic. It wasn't a sprack. Our house was always put together. A lot of details were always in place. And so watching that and observing it, that stuck with me.
You may remember Kenny from Top Chef, but you may be surprised to know that it almost didn't happen. In the words of Kenny, I had no interest. But with little convincing from a trusted friend, he took the chance of a lifetime and joined season 7.
Yeah, you know, I was up in Colorado. I was reaching out to Mike Battaglia, who won season 6 of Top Chef, trying to get, you know, we had a mutual friend and there was a position that was available, and Mike was the perfect person for that job. So I remember texting him on my BlackBerry at the time, like, hey, Mike, you know, got this job opportunity for you in Huntington Beach, California, blah, 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 blah. And he wasn't responding. I was like, man, he usually would respond. He calls me up a couple weeks later. He goes, oh, man, I'm sorry. I was way taping a show called Top Chef. I was like, no, you didn't. I was like, why would you do that? You know, he goes, oh, he says, it was great experience. I can't say anything about it, but I recommended you to go on the show. He said, I think you would kill it. And I said, I'm not going on the show. Like, I have no interest in doing that, you know? And he goes, well, producer named Donna Lee is going to give you a call in the next 20 minutes or so. I told her I was talking to you and they're going to give you a call. So you need to, you know, answer the phone. So I talked to Donna Lee and she convinced me to do an interview. And after I did an interview, it turned into another interview. And the next thing I know, I got on. So it really was because of Mike. it was because of Mike and Donna Lee that I got on. Cause I really didn't, you know, I didn't have an interest in going on at all. And I'm glad that I did. It was probably one of the best experiences of my career.
Kenny's experience as a chef has played a vital role in his life, both personally and professionally, shaping his impact to one day run a restaurant of his own. But like any business, it comes with its ups and downs. What he learned about himself and his form of leadership following the opening went on to change the trajectory of how he hires his staff.
Probably the most valuable lesson I learned is that it's really difficult to not only open the business, but also to make sure that everyone ends up having the same vision as you for your business, and hiring the right people to instill those standards with them. Because it's one thing for me to come in and break my back every day and cook passionately for the guests and go out, do the shopping, scrub a toilet, clean a floor, wash dishes, all that kind of stuff. So when I go back at it, like, I know that it's really hard to find people, and it's hard to instill that discipline into them. So I do my best to share my journey with others through way of my stories or my posts in social media. So that's, you know, I've always said that as you learn, you teach, and as you teach, you learn. I think it's a very beautiful cycle. You know, as I learn how to do something, if I learn how to do a podcast and do all the process with it, and then I bring somebody else on and I teach them how to do it, I'm reinforcing what I've learned by teaching them, you know, and then they're going to maybe make some mistakes or whatever. And then I'm going to go back and say, oh, no, you need to do this. You need to do this. You need to do this. You missed that part or whatever. It's a constant cycle. So I think it's very fulfilling to do it, but it's hard to find like-minded people. So the lesson I learned is to not overextend myself, even though opportunities present them. It's okay to say no. You know, I talked to, you know, Kevin Spraga, who was the winner of my season at Top Chef. We've been very good friends over the years. Tiffany Deary, they both religiously say all the time, and I've adopted this as well, that it's okay to say no. It's okay to bypass somebody. It's okay to make hard decisions for the best interest of your business. I just had to let my sous chef go. That's been with me for 5 years because he was refusing to grow anymore, to take on any kind of leadership. So I've learned that the hard decisions that I make, it may be harder on me late, you know, for a period of time, but it's going to help the operation be better in the future, you know? And I had to learn to really identify to the areas that were the defects in the business, even more so than I had before, and then make faster decisions. You know, sometimes I would allow my heart to get involved in thinking about the person and how they're going to survive, how they're going to do this or that. Well, guess what? You fall down 7 times, you get up 8. You know what I mean? Like, either you're going to grow and learn from your mistakes, or you're not. And if you're not, then I can't have you a part of my operations. You know, I'm glad that I did it the way that I did, because now I know when to cut certain things loose. If you're not qualified and not skilled to do the job, you're not going to be hired. I'll do it myself until I find the right people. I'll do less than to make sure that we're providing a quality product. And then when we get more staff in that are trained properly and everything's in alignment, then we'll add. But until then, this is just how we do things. So I learned to make better, faster decisions.
Kenny has always stayed true to his determination and journey. But when asked what has been his greatest sacrifice while building his career and clientele, Kenny assured me it was time. Time being one of his most cherishable assets, but also the greatest capacity of his loss.
The sacrifice is, it's a lot. And I look at, for me, I've sacrificed a lot as well. I was married at like 19, 20 years old. My first wife died in a car accident when my daughter was a year and 4 months old. I had to take on the responsibility of raising my little girl. I didn't pawn her off on anybody. I basically took her and I could have very easily said, hey, mom, will you help out and raise her, or my wife's, you know, mother. But I didn't do that. I said, no, this is my responsibility. I was raised to do this. You know, I was prepared to do this. And so the sacrifice of making sure that I was working hard to ensure that she never wanted or needed anything was my focus the entire time. Like always, on top of me honing my career, I focus in on making sure that she never needed diapers or needed food or whatever. I remember one time when her mother was still around, and I was working 2 jobs, like there was an issue, like I don't know if we missed the payment or whatever happened, but our electric bill, like our lights were turned off, you know, and we didn't have enough food. And I remember like it was a miscommunication getting the bill out, or my paycheck was late or something that happened. But I remember that feeling of being in the apartment and there was no power. And I was like, here it is. I'm busting my butt. I'm working 2 jobs. I'm working at the Ritz. I'm working over here at the Tree Steakhouse off at Arlington Road, you know, doing prep. I'm coming home, you know, and I'm making food for my daughter, homemade baby food. I'm just working like where it's like, there's no end in sight. And then all of a sudden, fast forward to my wife passes away. And then all of a sudden I'm having to raise my daughter and still, you know, had to figure out daycare and after daycare, childcare, because of the hours I was working at the Ritz, you know, the sacrifice was me not spending as much time with my daughter at times because I had to make sure that I never wanted the lights ever not to be on. I never wanted to be in a situation ever thinking about like there wasn't enough food in the house or clothing. And I made sure of that, you know, that one mistake of a miscommunication or whatever, I said, I'm never going to have that happen again. And I've sacrificed time spent with friends, with family, mainly my daughter, you know, my wife now, my wife's a nurse, you know, there's times in that, you know, she might work 3-12 and be off for 4 days and say, oh, let's go take a trip. And I can't necessarily go do that because I'm running the operation, I'm running the business. And so that puts a burden sometimes on the relationship. He's like, oh, well, I want to go do this. I'm like, okay, well, you can go do that, but I can't at this point of running this business because this person just called in. This person didn't, you know, no call, no showed. We got a catering on this day for, you know, 500 people and that has to be prepped and we're short staffed. Like there's sacrifice all the time. But I look at it as like, you know what, I'm going to be able to, you know, my goal is to retire at a certain age and I'm not going to be able to do that unless I work harder and smarter, you know, like I have to be more efficient with some decision-making, bringing right people on. But ultimately, I've sacrificed so much up to this point. I mean, I've been doing this I'm 48 now. I've been doing it professionally from the level at Ritz-Carlton since for 30 years. You know, and I know I've built a lot of great relationships, but I also probably have lost some because of not having the time. So the sacrifice of time, because you can't get time back, time with loved ones, you know, like I would love to be able to go to Christmas and Thanksgiving with my mom every year, you know, and have all my brother and my nieces and like all the nieces and nephews to be there, you know, our animals, like all of the, like this to be there in a very warm and friendly home and laughing and having a drink and food. But my profession does not allow that. I end up cooking for other people's holidays.
And in closing, advice for fellow Black creatives.
I think that you have to just be diligent, you know, whatever your focus is, whatever your passion is, manifest it, talk about it, you know, you speak it into existence and be consistent, you know, don't be afraid to fail, you know, failure is a part of the process. If you don't burn something in the kitchen, you're not going to know, you know, how not to do that again. You know, you have to, everything's not going to be just the perfect timing. You can mm-hmm. off a little bit. You can say, oh, well, this is at 425. I put it in there for 10 minutes. This is going to be perfect. And then our oven, you know, it might tell you different. It might say, well, you should add in there for 7 minutes. So the 3 minutes burned it, you know? So like, you know, set your goals, write them down. You know, that's the halfway point to get into your goals by writing it down. And then from there, just be consistent and persistent in your pursuit of excellence. You know, don't settle. You know, don't settle in any way, shape, or form. If this is your process, this is your system, this is how you want it, that's how it needs to be. And don't be afraid to mess something up and then start over. Because everyone, I don't care if 50 Cent, I don't care, like Kanye, like you can look at different artists all over. Everyone has had some kind of failure at some point or something that didn't work out the way they wanted it to. Whether it be bankruptcy, whether it be having to borrow money because you misinterpreted how much you needed something, that's okay. You know, learn from that. You know, write down your budget. You know, people talk all the time about like, oh, I'm gonna open this business. Okay, do you know how to write a budget? Do you know how to write a business plan? What's gonna be the return on your investment for the money that you're putting into this? Just be passionate about what you have going on and be focused and diligent.
We Are Made Studios is a gathering place for Black voices, stories, and their work, produced and edited by We Are Made Radio.